Good one.
And we welcome you to our cheerful and happy show.
To our what?
Well, it is sort of true.
We'll send someone right out. Now this won't hurt a bit. Then I'll meet it.
People may misconstrue that remark as that we'd be happy and gleeful over the present state of certain Connecticut politicians.
Well, we are.
That's right, we are.
Well, let me just say, as long as we're talking about the Roland situation, I have a couple of things to say about this. By the way, do you think he still hangs up on people? I bet you he doesn't. You know how he's hanging up on Rob Simmons all the time? I bet you he talks to everybody now. I bet you he'll take anybody's call. He's probably,
I'm not sure about that.
Sitting there on dinner time going, oh, really? Now, how many anytime minutes do I get with that?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. So, here's the thing. Now, Moira Lyons has announced, basically, that there will be a committee, an investigative committee. I believe they're not using the other I word. But anyway, there's going to be an investigative committee. Now, I have a number of things I want to say about this. But first of all, I just want to say that, yes, as I said yesterday, in all fairness to Moira Lyons, okay, she's moving in the right direction now, and she's showing a little bit more nerve about all this stuff. But these people are not to be congratulated. I mean, they had to be dragged kicking and screaming by the likes of us into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I will go to my grave believing that if this show and a few other outside organs of the press and stuff like that and the constituents in general hadn't just bullied them, they would have flopped on this. And I'm not convinced, by the way, that they're still not going to flop on this. And I have another thing that I want to say about this committee, which is you will know how serious this committee is and how seriously Moira Lyons takes this committee and how independent she is willing to have the committee be from her meddling and control by who's on it. And very specifically, the thing to watch for, as far as I'm concerned, in my humble opinion, is whether or not Mike Lawler is on it. If Mike Lawler is not on it, unless it's the case that for some reason or other Mike Lawler doesn't want to be on it. But here's the reason that I think this is important. And I'm concerned about this, too, because, I mean, the rumor is that John Wayne Fox is going to be the chairman of the committee. And I just think it's kind of unlikely, based on what I know about the law of the jungle, that John Wayne Fox is going to be the chairman of the committee, and then they're going to put Lawler on it as a rank-and-file member. Maybe they would. But Lawler's a former prosecutor. I mean, Lawler has two things going for him. He's an ex-prosecutor, so he really does, and he's a state legislator. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He's from East Haven, or one of the Havens. We know him pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy. He's not regarded as insanely partisan. I mean, he's not a guy who would be ever regarded as some kind of political hitman. Yes, he has his point of view. Yes, he's, you know, a semi-progressive Democrat, I think would be fair to say. But he's not regarded as the kind of guy who would go out, you know, with some kind of goal of bagging John Rowland's head. So, but he's a former prosecutor, so he really does know how to do this. He knows what kind of questions to ask. He knows what kind of witnesses to get. More so than anybody else who's sitting up there on the state legislature, Lawler knows how to do this. And so if he's not on the committee, either he doesn't want to be on the committee, or they don't want somebody who knows how to do this, or they don't want somebody that they can't control. And I don't think that Lawler would be comfortable with a lot of meddling, you know, from on high. And that might be a problem that they have with him. But as far as I'm concerned, these people deserve very little credit. I'm talking about the leadership of the General Assembly. Yes, they are talking a lot tougher now, but they deserve very little credit for their current line of tough talk. And as far as I'm concerned, it's like bringing a toddler to Pottery Barn. You have to hold their hands all the time.
Pottery Barn.
Yeah, you have to hold their hands all the time and make sure that they don't make a freaking mess out of everything.
Yep.
Because they cannot be trusted. Then they will wander away from the actual task at hand if they're given an opportunity. So we are, all of us have to watch them. Watch them, watch them.
It's probably an obvious question, but why?
I don't think it is an obvious question, and I don't necessarily think they're acting like this.
Why does it take a rocket scientist to figure out that this needed to be done?
No.
What are they afraid of?
I think we don't. I think there's not one thing that they're afraid of. And I mean,
it's an obligation, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it is an obligation. It's an obligation to do it and to do it well, and to do it in a sufficiently exhaustive way so that people achieve some level of comfort with the results. I think there's a bunch of reasons why they're not comfortable with it. But I think in general, these are people, the people at the top of the legislature, are people who've been very comfortable collaborating with Rowland in the past. I don't think they're as comfortable with an adversarial situation that was out of control, that they couldn't control. I think control is, I mean, they may say a lot about how they want this committee to function independently, but if they want the commission to function independently, they'll put some independent thinkers on the commission, or committee, or whatever it is, and they'll put some people on the committee with some actual training on how to do this. So anyway, watch for Lawler's name. If it's not on the list, there's a problem. I did talk to one legislator today. I'm not going to say who it was, but I think this is a pretty common story. This legislator was sitting in a car at a light. And keep in mind, the state legislators have plates on their cars that say, you know, state legislator. They have legislative plates that say, you know, 13th district or whatever. So this legislator is sitting at a traffic light, and there's a car behind honking, beep, 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 you know, and then pretty soon the guy in the car isn't just honking, he's got his head out the window yelling something. So the state legislator the state legislator's thinking, you know, do I have a flat tire, are my lights on, or, you know, what's going on, am I doing something wrong? State legislator rolls down the window, and the guy goes, "Impeach him! You gotta impeach him!" I love that story.
It's beautiful.
I think it's a pretty common occurrence. And so anyway, our numbers are 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star WTIC. We're trying to look into this, but I was told earlier today that there's some kind of Ralph Nader-connected organization that's having a press conference today about what, for the last 10 years, have been the most corrupt states in the union. And that we are currently only 32 because they didn't factor in the 2003 corruption statistics. So we're 32 with a bullet. But we'll try to get to
those 2003 stats. Ought to bring it up.
They could put us a right over the top. I think we could go racing past Mississippi.
Right. Top 10.
I see us challenging New Jersey and Rhode Island.
That might be a lot, but maybe.
All right. Anyway, we welcome your phone calls, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star WTIC. Later in the show, I do want to talk about this $1.5 billion drive to promote marriage.
Oh, yes, that's a great idea, that is.
And you know, we should also talk a little bit about what might happen in Iowa and in New Hampshire and what that might all mean. Also, it turns out hockey players are not comfortable anymore not having teeth, which I think is kind of sad, actually.
Here is Rick in West Hartford. Rick.
The death led to a change in the state law, increasing the penalties for assaults on pregnant women. President Bush sees the moon as the gateway to Mars. The president's outlining his plans for space exploration to NASA this hour.
Today we set a new course for America's space program. We will give NASA a new focus and vision for future exploration. We will build new ships to carry man forward into the universe, to gain a new foothold on the moon, and to prepare for new journeys to the worlds beyond our own.
The president says the exploration of the solar system will be affordable and sustainable. The Federal Reserve says the economy continues to gather steam.
We have a quiet moment here.
We're going to Mars. We're going to Mars.
Yes, we're going to Mars, and we're only going to have heterosexual marriages. So we're going to start it all over again the way God intended.
She showed up once with her on the sidelines with Joe. She said, "Joe, what do you think about blah, 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 blah?"
Yeah.
And he said, "I want to kiss you." And they're like, okay.
You know, you do that, it's almost like Joe Namath is in the room. It's uncanny the way you've got him.
So they cut away, go to the booth, whatever, and then they come back.
Well,
and she says, "So, Joe, try it again. Hey, what do you think about blah, blah, blah?" "I really want to kiss you."
I hope we're rolling tape on this. Right? Here's the front on as long as he can, and he's... You look at his comments today where he basically said, "Oh, impeachment, yeah, ooh, that sounds good."
Yeah.
Let's have one of those impeachments. I like those. I mean, you look at his comments, you think he's not daunted by any of this, and he doesn't care how many of it, people from his own party come out against him. And I just want to say one thing about Danny Harris column today, too.
Here's Charles in a car. Charles.
Hey, guys. Hey,
Let me just quickly mention about the governor, since everyone's talking about the governor. You know, maybe he could join NASA and be the first governor of the moon. But that's not why I called.
That's a great idea, though.
Yeah, I called about the supplemental car tax. Has that ever come up on your program?
I think from time to time it does, but I...
Well, anyway, this is supplemental car payment month.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, for those who are listening now, if they're planning on buying a car in the new year, well, later this year in 2004, mm-hmm. don't buy your car the last day of July. Because if you buy your car and it's registered the last day of July, you'll have to pay 25% of the annual tax for that car, for that one day.
Wow.
So you definitely don't want to buy a car the last day of July. That's the way they structured the supplemental car tax.
I run this, all this kind of stuff by Bruce Williams personally. I have his home number, so when these things come up. But I mean, for now, I'll take your word for it.
All right. A little public service announcement.
Isaac.
Not you?
What?
A little perfect public service.
Yeah, what if it's not true, though? I mean, who is that guy?
Truth. Don't worry about that.
I mean,
anybody else worry about it?
Should we ask Bruce Williams or Hans Brinker or whoever it is who.
Bob Brinker.
Bob Brinker.
The skating economist.
The skating economist, yeah.
Yeah.
And does he have all his teeth? I thought it was an interesting article in the New York Times today. It was basically about hockey players. You know, it used to be that hockey players just had no teeth. No one expected them to have teeth. And it was fine. But now, some of them, they want to have teeth. And sometimes if they, like, give an interview or something, they put their upper plate in. I mean, they got, you know, they got some kind of, I don't know what you would call this. I mean, I don't think it would be a good idea to spend a lot of money on veneers if you're a hockey player, because your teeth do get knocked out periodically. But I guess they have little sort of thing. They're not comfortable being these toothless, you know, gumming Canadians.
Yeah, which makes you wonder why they would have been comfortable with it before.
Well, because they were Canadians, and, you know, I mean, people didn't have, like, you know, ski masks, and people don't really look at each other in Canada that much.
Is this the Lawrence Alabozek song?
The New York Times, by the way, the nation's largest newspaper. Is it still the nation's largest newspaper? It's the best newspaper, let's say, just to say that. Their editorial page today, they do, I thought they'd already done this, but apparently they hadn't. They have an editorial calling upon Governor Rowland to resign. We're sort of like the Hong Kong Daily Standard, too. So. it's an easy editorial, you know.
Yeah.
People can just sort of bat that one out. They don't have to think about it too hard. But it is the number two editorial today in the New York Times, Governor Rowland.
Sandusfield, Massachusetts Bugle also calls for...
There are also a number of interesting letters to the editor about a subject which I brought up on Monday, which nobody cared about whatsoever, and which no number of interesting letters to the editor about a subject which I brought up on Monday, which nobody cared about whatsoever, and which no one will care about this time either. But I don't care because I just don't. Before I say that, let me just say something else that also people don't care about, and it is a subject on which I am fantastically boring. But I'm going to say it one more time. You know, for years, I knew people who would say to me, oh, yoga, yoga, yoga. Yoga's so great. Yoga's so great. And I go, yeah, fine. Yoga this, all right? But it really is great. And I was in the worst mood this morning, and I went to yoga, and I feel terrific now. I feel wonder. Look at me. I'm like the happiest person you know. I'm thinking about having...
That's not saying much in my case, but anyway.
No, that's true. You don't know that many happy people. And I'm really not usually ordinarily all that happy a person, but yoga really does make me feel better. And I'm thinking about... There's no way that we can actually have a yoga class on the radio. We could never do... I mean, although we've done stupider things than that. But I'd like to bring my yoga instructor, John, in sometimes just to talk to people. Talk to the people of Connecticut. Because I think he might be able to get them to feel better in these troubled
yoga
times.
Yoga instructor, John.
Yeah, he's part of Team Colin. He's my hot room yoga guy. But if he were just to run the people of Connecticut through some simple breathing exercises... I think this whole impeachment thing would probably go a little bit more easily. You know, people would be getting in states of less dark despair. Okay.
All right.
And the other thing that I was going to talk about was the movie credits, but I'll wait. I can wait. That's fine. Go ahead, take Michael. I think he's called up about 16 times about this.
Michael?
Yes, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
A couple of things. Michelle Jacqueline article, I think it was today, regarding...
I talked about this yesterday, actually, but yes.
Okay, and the other question I had, did you say anything about the article in Sunday's paper? There was another in your section, Kevin Rennie or something?
The Colin McEnroe section, yes.
Yeah, what was that article? What was your comment on that?
What did the Colin McEnroe section?
He said my section, so I thought
your section.
I was trying to make that my section.
Don't make this any worse than it already is.
Actually, I'm trying to get there to be a Colin McEnroe section that would be just about me, that would have stuff about my haircut and my yoga and my new glasses and stuff like that. Yeah. If they would just put out a little section every day, it would save so much time, or like once a week, would save so much time on this radio show, because I would just say, just check the...
No, you wouldn't. You'd come up with something else, and you'd be promoting it still.
Yeah, well, maybe. But, you know, the pictures of me drinking wheatgrass and stuff. Anyway, the article that you're talking about, well, I don't want to get too much into this, but, I mean, the point that Kevin Rennie is making is that eventually Kevin O'Connor, who is a fine, upstanding Republican person with a...
A man who you've fairly humiliated over the years.
But anyway, no, I mean, Kevin O'Connor, who's a good guy. I know Kevin. He's a good guy. He's got appointed U.S. attorney. Now, one of the problems with that is that Kevin O'Connor's wife has been of counsel to Governor Rowland for quite some time. She's been part of Governor Rowland's
Team Rowland.
Team Rowland. She's been part of Team Rowland. Which means that for that reason, as well as perhaps some other reasons, Kevin has to recuse himself from everything having to do with investigating Governor Rowland. Well, Kevin Rennie's point is that at a time when the U.S. attorney should be like the most visible person in Connecticut, just about, a time when the U.S. attorney's office is involved in a wide-ranging, multi-pronged investigation into wrongdoing in the Rowland administration, and wrongdoing which now it is now clear they regard as reaching right up to John Rowland, at a time when the U.S. attorney should be this, you know, this very visible person and this very important person, instead the U.S. attorney has to recuse himself from everything having to do with this incredibly important investigation, and that there's a certain irony there. And that's all I'm going to say about this. I mean, there's something else that I could say about this, but I'm not going to say it. And there aren't that many instances when I go that route, but I'm restraining myself. Because I just don't want to have to deal with a whole lot of stuff from people about it.
Tom in West Hartford, Tom.
Yeah, how's it going? My roommate, Samantha, right, is the most self-centered person I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, he has the gall to go out in a mink coat and steel-toed high heels and stuff and with a cigar in his mouth, and he goes to the bars and nobody bothers him. And I said, you know, you shouldn't do this because most people don't do this. And he's like, well, I don't care what other people say. I'm going to do what I want. And he says that to me, right?
Right.
It's kind of like Governor Rowland, you know? What do you think about that?
I'm not sure I get this analogy at all.
Well, actually,
help me, Tom.
Everybody kind of wants the guy to go.
Huh?
Everybody kind of wants the guy to go.
Oh, but he won't go.
Huh?
So he's self-centered in a way that's similar to Samantha.
Yes, definitely.
But you weren't suggesting that Governor Rowland is a cross-dresser or anything like that.
Well, that's not what Samantha said, but again, that's my roommate talking.
Okay, thanks very much for your call. I think I understand. Why would I be asking?
You understand that?
Why would I feel the need to ask?
How the hell do you understand?
Why would I think that it was even important to understand something like that? But I do. Well, since there's no, we have a little opportunity here to talk about something else for a minute and a half.
Get back on the yoga thing again?
No, not the yoga thing. I want to mention the movie credits thing, because I brought this up the other day, and nobody cared about it, but who cares? This article in the New York Times said that movie credits are getting longer, and that the movie credits for Lord of the Rings were 9 minutes and 33 seconds. And the New York Times article kind of took the position that this was another example of egos getting out of control, because everybody's got to be listed in the freaking movie credits. You know, and it's kind of like how now if your kid plays basketball, he gets a trophy just for being on the team or something like that. You know, everybody gets a trophy at the end of the season, but everybody gets in the movie credits. Well, actually, there are a number of people who wrote to the Times today to object to that article and say it's the opposite, really. It's finally there's recognition that making a movie is a collaborative process, that unheralded, unsung people put in 14-hour days and they don't get, you know, I mean, that they deserve to be in the movie credits, and who cares at the minutes? If you don't like them, just leave. Walk out.
Well, that's true, but don't they get paid?
They do get paid.
Well?
It would be like, we usually thank Bobby at the end of the show.
He doesn't get paid.
But he doesn't get paid, that's right, so that's why we do it.
Yeah.
But we can't thank everybody. We can't thank Joanne for being such a great receptionist, or, you know.
Well, we could, but it would take up, you know.
Yeah, and people don't care
about movies. But it's not like the movies where when our show ends, it ends. It's not like we can take another 9 minutes into the news.
Right, we can't do that.
Yakking about.
We could, while Bill Pierce is doing the news, we could be saying these things in the background. He would find that irritating, I think.
Probably.
But we can't thank every. I mean, lots of people contribute in lots of different ways. We have our boss, Janine Lee. We could thank her.
Yep.
And then her boss, Steve Salhaney, who.
Yeah.
wrecked everything, basically.
Well,
we could have negative credit. People who actually detracted
right.
from the quality of the show. then we would mention him. Yeah.
2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Gaither. How may I help you?
Hi, yes. We have locked ourselves out of our black Denali, and the engine is running.
Okay, I'm sorry you locked out. This evening, I'd be happy to help you with that, sir. Did you have an OnStar account number with you by chance?
760.
An OnStar advisor can send a signal to unlock your doors in most cases.
All right, we're back. Should we talk quickly to Jamie?
I think I'd like to be one of those OnStar people. That sounds like a fun job.
You know what I'd be doing? Unlock doors
and, you know, like do a test on the car.
Yeah, but I'd be saying stuff like, yeah, I'll unlock your doors, but first of all, who's your daddy, all right? Who's your daddy?
Yeah, a little tip. Yeah. A tip might be nice, a little gratuity.
Just some props, some, you know. I just want my snaps before I do it, you know what I'm saying? Who's your daddy?
Jamie in a car, hi.
Hey, how's it going, Colin? How's it going, Bruce?
Great.
Yeah. We don't have time to talk about this now, but I want to say one more thing about the role. Well, maybe we do. Do we have 2 minutes?
We have 2 minutes.
The Roland administration will be brought down by, among other things, bad poetry. It's now clear that bad poetry will be the undoing of the Roland administration. Uh-huh. I love that little, I mean, first of all, we had Patty's poem, but now we have this little weird inspirational poem that he read yesterday. Did you read this? This poem called Anyway?
I haven't read it, but that nothing surprises me.
He found this poem called Anyway that somebody else had found on the back of a bookmark or something, but it's an inspirational poem. It's sort of basically, you know...
You sure it wasn't called whatever?
You know, it's called Anyway. It's basically, you know, people will hit you and revile you if you do good things, but do good things anyway. It's that kind of thing. You know, people will think you're strange if you keep fruit bats and breakfast cereals in your pants, but keep them in your pants anyway. And then,
the hyper current will get you anyway.
Yeah. So it's this inspirational poem about how you should, no matter what, you should do the right thing anyway. And I realized when I was reading it today.
What?
I said,
you should do the right thing anyway. He's reading this poem?
Yeah, well, the funny thing about it, which is there's one line in the poem, apparently, that has to do with honesty and frankness.
Yeah.
And he redacted that. I mean, apparently in the original poem, there's this thing about, you know, people will, if you're honest and frank, people will whiz on you or something. But be honest and frank anyway. And so he redacted that thing. It was like even he knew he couldn't go up there with that one. But I was reading this and I was thinking, what is this? And I finally realized what it is. It's chicken soup for the politician's soul. Chicken soup for the parentheses corrupt, close parentheses, politician's soul. And then I'm thinking, why don't I pitch that book to the chicken soup people? There's a lot of them out there, you know? I mean, I've always hated those chicken soup books.
Yeah, but if you were making a chunk of money off it, you wouldn't hate it anymore, right?
Yeah.
They'd like it.
People will say that you've written this stupid and sickly, treacly book, but write that book anyway. See, it's once you learn the little formula there. Not too bad.
Write that book anyway.
That's right. Yeah. People will say you're a creep if you expose yourself in public bus stations. But expose yourself in public bus stations anyway.
Now, we also have a 4-pack of passes to the Connecticut Powerboat Show at the Connecticut Expo Center.
Arrgh!
That'll be, I'll be on hand Sunday from 11 to 1.
You will be.
I will be.
From
the show goes
Sunday.
On like all weekend.
Arrgh!
I think it actually
goes. But you'd best be there when Captain Bruce is there.
Right. Because everybody that wins these tickets will get a key that could start the 10-foot tracker grizzly.
Or we'll be sticking a harpoon in your Skyview innards. Arrgh!
Which has a 25-horsepower Mercury motor and a Trailer Star trailer, courtesy of Lewis Marine, Connecticut Powerboat Show, and WTIC. I'm losing my voice again.
They don't really do the Arrgh.
That's why I haven't done the ARG. Mm. I can do the ARG. Okay, but I'm not going to do that. You all won't be able to talk for the rest of the show.
You should see if Sinetti and Morgan would come with you and sing some sea shanties. You know.
Well, I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
But they probably want big bucks, though.
Yeah.
And you know how that works.
In terms of, I know...
You get it from me.
In the sea shanty industry, they do draw top dollar. You know, there are other sea shanty groups that will work cheaper, but not as good. Right. They're worth every penny they get.
By the way, first call, 1-800-953-1080.
We have a winner.
Do we have a winner? Or
no, we actually don't. But I figure I might as well say it anyway because they're all going to say, don't call the talk lines, you morons. Oh, 1-800-953-1080. They're going to jam up our talk lines now. That's what they do because they don't understand. Call 1-800-953-1080. Calling the talk line is not going to get you this prize, all right? That's better. That's better. Hang up now. We have a winner. Somebody just called. Go away.
That's hardly good good public relations that's etiquette.
Like, I'll probably get along with the listeners better if I didn't say things like that. I'll call them morons and tell them to go away. I understand
Maybe.
But it's just like you just give out some kind of prize. Now, this is a good prize because it's a chance to see you in your natural powerboat habitat, which not that many people get to see. It's a chance to see Captain Bruce and enjoy a swig of rum with him.
Free rum
when Captain Bruce is around.
Free rum.
Free rum, an extra ration of rum for all the men.
Did I tell you the story about when I was in Cincinnati, they wanted me to go into the car show?
Yeah.
And I had it was a television station where I worked, and they said, go in there, we want you to, you know, run around and do crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought they had cleared all of it with the people that run the show. So I'm jumping up on those turntables, you know, where the cars run, riding around and waving. Security showed up, and they didn't have it cleared.
Uh-oh.
So it wasn't pleasant for a few minutes, but like a complete fool, even more so than usual.
Well, you're going to be great at this thing. This is going to be tons of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And sometime around 12:30 that day, they're going to amputate the leg of a cabin boy. It's very master and commander. You should get one of those Nelsonian hats, though, if you're going to do this. There seems to be some dispute about the authorship of the poem, which is now, I guess, sometimes, it's either called Anyway or Love Them Anyway, depending on how you... This is the poem that Governor Rowland read yesterday. People are unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Love them anyway.
Do we have a poet laureate? We do, don't we?
We
right?
do.
What's he doing with this stuff?
I don't know. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. Be invisible and have your knees removed. That's a Steve Martin one. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. Anyway, well, somebody called Bobby Sherwood and said that it's written by Mother Teresa. Now, first of all, I don't happen to think that that's true, although Mother Teresa is credited in some places with this. But I think it's like saying Tom Jones wrote What's New, Pussycat. I think Mother Teresa may have done this as part of her act.
She wrote What's New, Pussycat?
No, she didn't write What's New, Pussycat. She co-wrote with Burt Bacharach and Hal David What's New, Pussycat. But that's before she was a mother. She was just a
lightning bolt's going to hit her any second.
But I think it's part of her act. Like when she played the Mohegan Sun, Mother Teresa did this poem. But I don't think she wrote this poem. As a matter of fact, I don't think she wrote poems in general. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I know she wrote Limerick.
Was this the Wolf Den?
She played the Wolf Den. She may have done this poem. But I don't think she wrote the poem. She wrote Limerick. She did a whole entire volume of Limericks, which is...
It was a little guy from Nantucket.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And it's very hard to find something that rhymes with transubstantiation, I might also add. But, anyway, what am I saying? Anyway, my understanding of this, to whatever extent I have understanding of it, is that, and I think The Current makes a good point today, too, it's actually written, they're called the Paradoxical Commandments, in some cases, and they appear to be written by a guy named Kent Keith when he was 19 years old. And there's more information about that on the web too. But anyway, that's who I don't think Mother Teresa wrote this. I know people were calling up and saying, why isn't he giving credit to Mother Teresa for writing this poem? First of all, I'm sure if Mother Teresa were alive today, she wouldn't want credit for a poem that John Rowland was reading while he was trying to save his hiney.
More than likely not.
But anyway, it's not that I'm trying. I want Mother Teresa to get her snaps, but these snaps are not coming to her.
What happened to the religious approach that he was taking for a while?
Well, this is like a secular religious approach.
Yeah.
Here, they're written by Kent Keith in 1968. These maxims have been mistakenly attributed to Mother Teresa because they were found engraved on the wall of the Home for Children in Calcutta, India. In fact, these ten maxims were written by Kent Keith in 1968 when he was 19, a sophomore at Harvard College. Kent copyrighted them and included them in a 65 booklet published for high school students, and he then sued Mother Teresa for her wimple.
What do you mean a 65 booklet if you wrote them in 68?
65 page booklet.
Okay.
I was getting overexcited there. Sorry. 65 page booklet in 1968. I don't know how they could be a 65. They must have had other maxims as well. But anyway, so Mother Teresa put it up, you know, and people were, you know, thinking she wrote it, but she didn't. So he sued her for her wimple. No, he didn't. He didn't sue Mother Teresa. He just got to do whatever she wants. But anyway, that's where these kind of come from. They're by some guy named Kent Keith. I don't know where he is today.
Hmm.
He may not know where he is today. But I just want to say, bad poetry, bad... I assume this is considered bad. I assume this is considered poetry. If it's poetry, it's definitely bad poetry. But between this and then the Patty Rowland thing, bad poetry will play a role in the downfall of Governor Rowland, such as no other politician has ever been brought low by bad poetry.
Is he? What's next? Is he singing like Tomorrow from Annie?
You know what he should do? He should sing. He should sing Desiderata. Don't you think he should?
Oh yeah.
He should release a Desiderata thing.
Les Crane, wasn't it? Was it, yeah, Les Crane that put that out,
right,
originally?
And then there was a Deteriorata thing that was very,
right,
funny, a very funny parody of it.
Desiderata, yeah.
Yeah. He should release some version of that. Go quietly among Pungni and impeaching legislators. You know.
We should put out a version of that.
That's right, yeah. Because he's clearly tapping into all this chicken soup for the disgusting politician's soul, and we should help him.
Desiderata, what a great idea.
What is Joe in his car want?
Well, I have no clue. Would you like to check?
Yeah, let's find out.
All right. Joe?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Colin.
What's up with that?
Yeah, I think it's time to take stock about that list that you were compiling a little while ago about not wanting to agitate people. And I'm one of the morons out here that listens to you faithfully.
All right. Am I agitating you? I don't even know what list did I say. I'm like the guy in Memento, basically. If I don't tattoo it on my thigh, I have no idea what you're talking about. Did I say I was doing a list that I was not going to agitate people about?
Yeah, I remember one time you were doing a list, and that wasn't too long ago either. We were talking about the impossibility of doing that because the minute you try to cater to one set of people, the other set of people, you've instantly agitated.
Oh, I remember that. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling.
Joe, he doesn't care anyway, so it doesn't make any difference.
I had a wonderful time talking to you about that in the past.
Well,
thanks so much for calling out.
Well, I think it's time to take stock about how you've advanced with that. With that endeavor.
I'm going to do some stock taking right now. Thanks so much for calling and reminding me of that whole instance, Joe. To be clear, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
That injunction against eating meat in that song, by the way, does include those cheeseburger fries, these new French fries that have cheeseburger in them, has burger inside them, which is being sponsored by the National Cattlemen's Association or something like that.
I wonder where you find those. Would they be in the dairy case or the meat case? Or where would
they
be?
In the Kevorkian section of your supermarket. If you want to just get it over with right now. Yeah, their advertising slogan is cheeseburger fries. You're going to die anyway.
Particular significance to this?
I think we're having a little full Monty episode here. I don't know. I don't understand. I have a question about that Channel 61 commercial.
Yeah.
Do you think that they just sort of went around with microphones waiting for people to say Justin said it would? And that people say it so frequently that it was easily just to sample that out there in public?
I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Just walk up and down the sidewalk.
Yeah,
anywhere.
I wondered if they just hung around in public places waiting for, like, the mall or something, waiting for people to say Justin said it would, and then that just happened so frequently that it was a relatively easy thing for them to accomplish.
I think you know exactly how that happened.
You know, I'm so depraved that Bill Pierce earlier today was talking about this steak thing that Starbucks is involved with somehow or other that has, like, coffee on the steak or as part of the steak or something.
Right.
That sounded good to me.
Of course it did.
That actually made my mouth water a little bit, the idea of coffee and steak. I mean, the steak that was somehow or other impregnated with
coffee. You should
be able
to roll it all right into one. Like those cheeseburger fries.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it just now, the little thing about the cheeseburger fries. But when Bill, usually when I hear about things like that, I go, blech, you know, or, but this sounds like, you know, I mean, it does sound like something that would make your heart race even as it clogged the arteries that you were going to need to survive. But I don't really care. I want to go that way, all right? I would be willing to die from a coffee impregnated, whatever, anyway. Should we talk to John?
Yeah. John in West Hartford. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about the Council on Foreign Relations. One of the Democratic presidential candidates was speaking before the council. I don't know if it was Gephardt or who it was, but what is this Council on Foreign Relations? Who are the members? How are they elected, and what purpose do they serve?
You know, I don't know the answer to this anymore, but, I mean, the Council on Foreign Relations is always being brought up by conspiracy, like, you know, by sort of Mel Gibson types who have, you know, a lot of magazine articles pasted up all over their walls and stuff like that. And it's it's often sort of suggested that it's something on the same order as the Trilateral Commission and the Illuminati and all, you know, all these sort of people who get together in a very bipartisan way, manipulate the fate of the world. It's always seemed to me much more wonkish than that. And if they were really as secretive and dangerous as conspiracy theorists like to make them sound, we wouldn't know all about them. But I mean, I don't know off the top of my head know who the members are, but I don't believe, if you're asking about the Council on Foreign Relations in that context, I don't happen to believe all that stuff about how, you know.
Well, are they a very influential committee?
The people who are on the Council on Foreign Relations are big machers, you know. I mean, you know, these are heavy hitters and stuff like that. But yeah.
You don't know how they're selected, do you, or how they get
I mean, out? I can try to find that out and maybe mention it later in the show. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay, I was just curious, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
The CFR is often cited by conspiracy theorists as proof that it's all one big conspiracy and there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats and they all get together and they, you know, decide the fate of the world and stuff like that, which may or may not be true, but I don't think they need something like the Council on Foreign Relations to accomplish that. Do we only have 24 seconds or do we have a minute and 24 seconds? I should pay attention when he tells us this stuff, but I just doesn't agree with my brain sometimes.
Okay. I'm thinking maybe like 2 years ago you started saying that.
Right. Well, the point that I was going to make was this. It would be good if we could get it. He mentioned the Democratic candidates. I'd love to talk. We don't have time right now, but maybe in the final half hour. Although we may have a visit from angry and bitter Olympic skier Kerry Scheinberg sometime in the next hour. I don't know. But the Democratic candidates, I do think that the race is getting more problematic. I thought Howard Dean had it won. But I can now see a scenario where Gephardt wins in Iowa, Clark wins in New Hampshire, and Dean is really, you know, in trouble. I mean, not necessarily permanently and indelibly in trouble, but that's a very, given the sort of horse race nature of American politics these days, that's the problem for him, particularly being from Vermont and not taking New Hampshire. A lot of people don't win New Hampshire. I believe McCain took New Hampshire, and I mean, you know, Clinton lost New Hampshire, and you know, a lot of times very viable people who get elected or nominated or elected president don't win New Hampshire. But to lose Iowa and lose New Hampshire and be from New England and not really have any other kind of national profile and have your main claim to fame at this point being you're the most electable guy and then you don't win the first two races, that's a little bit of a problem. And you could even get into a draft Gore moment. Should be fun.
Reason. Then it should become partly sunny and windy Thursday afternoon, highs between 6 and 16 degrees. Then there's a wind chill warning, which is a step up from a wind chill advisory, an actual wind chill warning for Thursday night into early Friday. Those wind chills could get down to 30 to 35 below zero, as we'll have gusty winds and low temperatures anywhere from 0 to 12 below on the thermometer. And then it's a fair Friday, but continued windy, highs 8 to 18. Temperatures will moderate quite a bit over the weekend, though, so hang in there. Right now, 11 degrees at the weather station, WTIC, News Talk 1080.
Je sens mon monarque débarque et étale son pouvoir. La puissance de l'ombre s'installe. Non, ne résiste pas, ne lutte pas, ne te détourne pas de la main tendue vers toi. Où je vais explorer le royaume de tes peurs en devenir le dictateur pour mieux te dominer. Là, tu deviens raisonnable, c'est bien, oui. Tombe sous le charme pour de meilleurs lendemains. Pour les rebelles, la force est trop forte.
Coming up on Fox Sports, Jeff Garcia and Oksana Bayul face Chris Pronger and Dave Hunter in the Battle of the Drunk Driving Professional Athlete Stars! It's time for Sports at One, the very first sports discussion segment. I thank Mr. Arnoldine, Michelle Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer. You know what? I had a lot of people to choose from for that joke, too.
No shortage of names.
What is that about? I mean, a lot of people drive drunk and stuff like that, but professional athletes, wow. You know, it actually must be that they think their physical skills are so good. They're so used to relying on their physical skills. They think they get hammered and then drive their Porsche around. Mm-hmm.
They are indestructible. We all know that.
Yeah.
But maybe they just drink more than other people.
Well, there's also, I mean, that's, you know what? I think part of the problem is, I mean, it's not so much that they do drink a lot because they have a lot of downtime. You know, when you're a professional athlete and you look at the, you know, during the season and stuff like that, I mean, you know, you got like a, it's not like us where it's just we get up in the morning and we just work all day.
We're in better shape than they are. We can do it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows?
Also, a lot of them are in a great deal of pain, and so they figure, well, I'll just have a drink, and it'll make me feel better.
Yeah. My sciatica.
You know, as much
as you even mention pain.
I love hockey players. I've always said that among all athletes, hockey players are the finest, nicest people in the world.
Yeah.
But boy, they do have some problems with drinking.
Because of their teeth, they can't eat anything. So they.
Miller and Millar were in here earlier today.
Apparently, Kevin Millar was like, just going up down to the house and just sort of like being a nice person.
He's a pretty outgoing guy.
Yeah. I mean, he actually met more people here today than I know.
He's been with him, and he said, introduce me to these people, you wouldn't have known.
No, I don't. Forget about that.
Yeah.
That's his other question. But he may be able to introduce me to some people that work here.
Yeah.
Kevin wouldn't mind coming back. I'd love to get to know some of these people.
And they seem
very nice.
Very, very well. The attendance that they got, for example.
Actually, coming back tonight, it's a separate admission that Dana.
Yeah. I have a theory about the UConn women's team.
Oh, please, advance.
We'll continue to lose until Governor Rowland's impeached. The state is cursed. We're going to have cold weather and women's basketball losses until Governor Rowland's impeached. It's a curse. A curse lies upon the land.
Well, let's
nothing
hope
will grow here either. Do you know there's anything growing right now either?
No, that's right. Oh. You're a well, except for that plant here in the reception desk.
Man, that thing's shooting up in the air.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be growing while we sit
here. It's a chrysanthemum, I think, or something. No, an azalea, I think is what it is. I don't know.
It's just one.
It's a green plant.
It hasn't blossomed yet. Yeah. It just is shooting straight up in the air. There's no other foliage or anything like that.
It's a wiener plant.
Everybody else thinks it, but he says it. It never fails.
Yeah, circumcised wiener plant.
Like I said.
What is that? That's disturbing.
Whatever it is.
We never should have pointed it out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to go back to last Sunday for one bit of unfinished business. When Brett Favre threw the curse.
Yeah, well, nothing will grow in Connecticut. Now, have you noticed that?
Plants growing out there in the lawn.
Indoor plants will grow, yes, that's true. But the soil of Connecticut is cursed right now. Because a great wickedness lies upon the land.
There's nothing's going to grow now anyway. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I knew you'd bring that up.
Sorry.
We have time to take a phone call. So we may be visiting with angry and bitter Olympic skier Carrie Sheinberg, but we'll just talk to her about whatever we would be talking about anyway. I mean, maybe we'll talk to her about why hockey players want to have teeth now. She might know the answer to that.
And teach me how to ski.
And teach you how to ski. And the numbers are, if you want to talk about something else right now, including the heinous governor and his icky problems, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star WTIC. I just want to mention what I said at the beginning of the show today, too, which is that, yes, okay, they're putting their little committee together. That doesn't mean that they're courageous or that they're, you know, willing to do the right thing. I mean, they've been shamed into this by us and others. And by the constituents, by the voters, you know, wanted this to happen. So the Democratic leadership of the legislature, yes, they're, you know, Moira's finally got this little committee going and stuff. But watch the membership of the committee. Because, as I said at the beginning of the show, these people, they're like toddlers in Pottery Barn. You have to hold their hands and make sure they do the right thing and they don't wreck everything. And so they need to put, you know, good people on this committee. And I think the bellwether, the person who should be on this committee, is Mike Lawler. Mike Lawler is a former prosecutor. He's a state representative. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He actually knows how to do something like this. And so if they don't put Mike Lawler on the committee, it suggests to me that they're not taking this very seriously. And they're not prepared to really go after. Go after is the wrong way. And, you know, and Mike Lawler is not a highly partisan guy. He's not a guy who would be in it to score political brownie points or anything like that. I mean, he would do it with rigor and vigor. And so anyway, I mean, there are a lot more steps in this process and a lot of ways that this process could belly flop. And it bears some watching. Information about this steak gummy bears, basically, I think.
Yeah.
And gummy worms and stuff like that. So anyway, she'll be joining us for a conversation about various things. I actually did get this information about this steak thing, which really does sound good. Although it's interesting because the Texas newspapers cover it as a steak that has coffee on it, and the Seattle newspapers cover it as coffee that has steak in it. But it's the espresso shot heard around the world. It's a 12-ounce filet mignon coated with ground espresso before being grilled, and it's caught on. It's become incredibly popular, and
It was on Good Morning America and stuff like that. And, you know, usually when I hear about stuff like this, I'm just really completely grossed out by it. But I would like something like this. If there's a restaurant around here that makes this, I would eat it.
The fact that they've got a special group of lawyers coming out of D.C. kind of suggests to me that the handwriting's on the wall for a governor.
Well, I commented on this a little bit more, but I just ate one of the gummy worms, and my teeth are actually locked together at this point. Well, I don't really think I can say anything about this.
Are we out of time anyway?
No. It was the whole minute.
Well.
Well,
Melissa, you got to see this. Mr. Radio.
I did this as a joke.
Mr. Radio.
I did this
because
I thought it was going to be funny. Turn her mic on. She's the one who's causing all this trouble.
I'm not ready.
All right, you're not ready yet?
Are you
still stretching? Well, as far as the Christine Regalia thing goes, Christine Regalia was head of DCF, and it was no secret that she was, she lawyered up very early. I believe Hope Seeley is her attorney. I could be wrong about that. But it seemed to me that early on she retained Hope Seeley as counsel. And what's she going to do? She's going to cough up anything she knows. She went on that trip to Ohio where they were looking at the juvenile detention facility and something.
Mm-hmm.
What's she going to do? She's going to be loyal to these people? No. And like everybody else involved in this, she will sing like a canary.
What about Dirty Hair?
Bad Hair? Bad Hair.
Some dirty fool.
See this haircut?
Better eat your peas, girl.
The guy who cut my hair cut Nora Jones's hair for her CD cover.
Get out.
It's true.
That's cool.
I live alone.
And had you been around here, you would have heard it at least 247 times.
Yeah. I live
How
alone.
Did you know that?
Yeah. Because he told me.
You believe him?
Yeah. I had heard it from other people, too.
Mm-hmm.
The joining us right now is angry and bitter Olympic skier, Carrie Sheinberg. Angry and bitter and cavity-prone Olympic skiers, it turns out. How many gummy bears would you say, or gummy worms, or
gummy fish?
Gummy fish.
Important.
Are those gummy fish, or are they Swedish fish?
They're Swedish fish.
Yeah.
And there were gummy worms in there before everybody ate them.
It's from all of the gummy food groups.
It's a gummy circus.
how much of this would you say you've eaten so far today?
Worms. Apparently, too many. My headache.
You actually have a gummy candy-related headache?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess...
Sugar, it messes with you.
You know,
those things are loaded with caffeine, don't you know it?
These things are...
No. Caffeine.
Sugar. Not a lot of impulse control there on the professional skiing circuit, it doesn't seem like. The, Yeah, are you actually going to sit there and take that?
What?
she's not even here anymore. She's having some kind of toxicity incident over there. She's having some kind of hypoglycemic crash right now. She's going to be a great guest.
You better pass it over.
All right, go ahead. Just knock yourself out.
It's called performance enhancing food right here.
Yeah. So you're actually pushing for more. You think that grown-ups should actually go sledding?
Absolutely. I think sledding is a long overlooked sport.
It's great. No, when we say sledding, like I think about like getting on my flexible flyer with the little metal runners and going down the hill.
No, there's all
like
these
that.
Really
it
cool covers, new kinds of sleds out there.
That was too big an area.
Yeah.
So many different ways you can do it.
Right. But you're talking about like going to ski slopes?